You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Reporting is eligible. I'm Paul Newman of Backpacking Company and the Shepherd Express. And a little bit of a light show today. It's the off season. People got stuff to do. But fortunately, I do have in Urban Wauwatosa a man who was actually on site in Indy covering the Combine live. Who we got there?
Yeah, it's J.R. Radcliffe, trending sports reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But of course, I was running around Indianapolis and reporting as eligible swag. I was waving a flag. I had a hat. And a shirt and a mic flag. It was all over the place. It was great.
Nice. We appreciate that. Everybody knows the
podcast
now. Yeah,
I wasn't doing
that. I know. That would have been quite the conflict of interest.
100%. It would be deeply, deeply problematic. But I did have dinner with one Tyler Brook. So there was a quorum of RAE contributors in one place at one time. That was exciting. I'm sure we'll talk more about that.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go. I couldn't like get a pass or anything like that, but it seems like it's a pretty good scene with like random Football Outsiders guys around and PFF guys around, and there's events, and it sounds fun if you're maybe more so if you're not working, actually, honestly.
Yeah, I mean that's 100% true. I was struck and for I guess those that don't know, I've been filling in on Packers coverage for the Journal Sentinel in the absence of Cassidy Hill, who left to take a job with the Carolina Panthers. She was at the Combine, had a great time hanging out with her. She is awesome, a singularly awesome person. And Olivia Reiner, who used to work for us, is now covering the Eagles in Philadelphia. So she was there. We did a podcast, the two of them and Tom Silverstein and myself. That was awesome. You can find that on the Journal Sentinel YouTube page, or just by going to a regular, our 319 podcast channel. But I was not prepared for the sort of celebrity sightings thing that would be going on. Like out at night is I looked around the restaurant where we were eating, where I was eating with Tyler Brook and among others, and Tex Western, of course, as well. Three of us dining together. It was fantastic. Oh my gosh, it was so great. But like everybody in the room is either an athlete, an agent, somebody connected with an NFL team, or like a famous media person. Chop Robinson was waiting for a table while we were probably a future first round pick.
One of the stars.
Chris
of
Jenkins
combine.
Walked
yes.
in. Isaac Arendo walked in. He would later become one of the stars of the combine. Mina Kimes walked out while we were there. There were so many famous people. Tyler Brook could not stay seated because he says hello to everyone. So he is constantly getting up and finding somebody else to say hello to. He knows everyone. He's very extremely charming man.
And that's good networking, very well, Tyler. Good hustle.
100%. 100%. And Tex was there the whole time, so I got to hang out with Tex quite a bit, which was really great. So cool that I got to see him. And there's just so it's crazy how like it is sort of a celebrity sighting thing, and for journalists it is a big time networking. It's big time, like not networking the wrong word maybe, but just trying to figure out what the news is, you know, and like talking to people who know people who've heard things. And that's not as much my role because I am a fill in and I'm primarily there for the audio video part of it and some feature writing and things like that. But for everybody else, it's a time to be out, be seen, see some people, and have a really good time. It's a wild, weird, made for media event, but it is an interesting event. I'll say that for sure.
Yeah. It looks like a good old time. And you also got to play trivia with Tex, I understand. We had Tex on last week.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah, actually, it's so funny. I was walking to the place. It was about a half hour walk from my hotel, so I figured why not. It was like 60 degrees that night. Where I met Tex, it was a brewery in an old church that had been converted. While listening to the episode of Reporting is Eligible featuring you and Tex, that's what was happening while I was walking to the brewery. And yes, Tex and I and another former colleague of mine at the Journal Sentinel, Matt Velasquez, we all got together.
I remember.
Yes,
Matt.
Former Bucks reporter, yeah. And all of us are, you know, I'm gonna blow my own horn just a little bit, but like the three of us are really good at trivia.
Yes,
all three of us are.
I can't speak to Matt, but I can speak to the other two of you, and you are both excellent at trivia.
Matt runs his own trivia games on Zoom with all his friends from around the country. Like,
got it.
It was really great. We actually only took third, which is kind of embarrassing, and I think we only took third because they miscounted. I misunderstood what our answer was on the final question and gave us credit where we didn't deserve it. But you know what? We had a great time. We still did very well. And definitely looking, it's never going to happen again because I don't expect to ever go to a combine again, but like, I can't wait to do it again.
Someday I'm going to make it. Okay. So onto football and
yes, there was some,
yes, there was some football. So I guess since you were there, like do you have any like big takeaways of people that you're like really interested in, people you're looking forward to see that you did see, any good local stories on anybody other than Garundo, of course, I'm already saying his name wrong. So that's,
yeah,
probably means we get it.
You know, it's funny. Very little of my time was actually spent inside Lucas Oil Stadium watching the drills themselves. I don't think you can really glean much from watching the drills from,
actually,
you know,
that makes
several
sense.
Sections,
I mean,
away.
You got to see,
yeah,
the box,
like,
right?
You're better. Yeah, it's the results page is what you need to know. And it's since it's all laser time, like, what am I seeing that from where I'm sitting inside the stadium? But I was actually really looking forward to Garundo because I knew that he was a rare combination of size and speed. And he was that way with Wisconsin too. And it was always exciting to try to see that speed on display, but it never happened because he had injuries. He had hamstring injuries and a really bad foot injury. And then it also happened to be a really crowded running back room. He was fighting for playing time with guys like Jonathan Taylor and Braylon Allen. And Ches Malusi was a veteran who was there most of the time. Like, there just wasn't, with the injury history, there just wasn't an opportunity there. And then at Louisville, he gets his shot, but really, even in Louisville, like, he's still the number two back.
Yeah, he's still,
you know,
the backup,
like,
there. It's really crazy.
Yeah, I knew he had some rare athletic gifts, but I didn't know he'd be invited to the combine. Like, I didn't think that was a slam dunk. Much like Mooma Jung Mehta for Wisconsin, like, mm-hmm. when they got invites, it's like, oh, that's really cool. Those are stories I didn't expect to get in on. And so I was excited that he actually performed as well as he did, because he really does have that kind of athleticism. Now, between the injury history and just, you know, what we saw with the limited tape on him in college, I don't know if that's going to translate to, like, you know, he's not moving up rounds and rounds or anything. He's not going to be like, I don't think he's going to be a third round pick or something, but maybe he gets that high. I don't know. I was excited about that.
Tyler had him as his, like, least, his worst graded running back that he had scouted. And I actually went and watched him after that combine. So I was like, what did this happen? And, he does run into the backs of his guys with some regularity. It is a thing. So you can use, but that's okay though. Like, if you know that's there, you can scheme around that. You can make him jet sweep guy. You can make him open space guy. Like, you can use running backs like that if you know how to do it. And hopefully he lands in the right place, or, you know, goes to vision school or something like that. Not a thing that exists right now, but you never know.
Yeah, and unfortunately, none of the running backs did agility drills, which kind of leaves a little bit of an incomplete picture.
Yeah, I would like to complain about that momentarily. So before the combine, I've been waiting for somebody to do this forever. Sumer Sports and Tej, whose last name I always forget, published a study they did on the combine drills that correlate best to NFL success for each individual position. And for running back, it's like just the agility drills. I think it's agility in one of the jumping drills. And like 40 doesn't matter at all. It's like a 0.04% correlation with NFL success. So I was waiting for the running back agility drills specifically because I was going to put together a little metric that used just the things that correlate well. Not, you know, the Raz card's great, but it tracks a lot of stuff that frankly doesn't matter for a lot of guys. And I was going to try and, you know, do a little better than that. And then nobody did agility drills for running backs. All we have for running backs are useless stats that don't matter.
Yeah.
So I have to wait for pro days and they're all weird and fudgy. So, and scheduling it like that seems just bad for NFL purposes. Like, sure, the NFL controls this. Surely front offices would like to have the important things measured accurately at the combine.
Yeah.
Everybody was saying, just do jumping last. If people skip jumping, like, you can't fudge jumping at pro days. It's just a tape measure. You know, it's not a stopwatch versus a laser timer. So, anyway, that's all. It ruined my statistical work that we didn't get any of that. It's annoying.
Well, and it sounds like there's a scheduling issue. They do the jumps and then, you know, they'd be expected to go right into the agility drills. Well, don't have that. Yeah. Have the jumps later and run those only at pro days, or, you know, have those be the least important thing, or spread them. I mean, I don't know how they could do this schedule wise, but like, these guys try to do all these drills in one day. I don't know if they have to. I feel like you could spread that out a little bit. There are 321 bodies that they're cycling through in different position groups. So I think they probably have to keep moving it along, but that did seem a little bit strange to me. The other thing is, I think there should be some concern that the combine as a concept is dying or on the road to being altered pretty dramatically. I mean, that Caleb Williams not doing the medical, quarterbacks not competing, a lot of star players, you know, not wanting to do certain aspects, Marvin Harrison not showing up at all.
Yeah.
It just makes you wonder what this is for.
One of the things the universe has been taunting me with is Keon Coleman, who 2 years ago was Jaden Reed's teammate at Michigan State, and Reed was better than he was, and I've never liked Coleman because I didn't like Reed, and, you know, Coleman was worse, and he transferred to Florida State, where people love him, by the way. He puts good tape out there. He has good body control. He mosses people. He does all that stuff. And my numbers don't like him. Like, for a guy who is supposed to be very athletically talented, his numbers aren't explosive enough. And then so we have the combine. He runs a 4.61, the slowest receiver time of the group. And again, 40 time, not that important. Still athletic. Like, his flying 10 is good. He still put up good explosion numbers. He still has a 9 RAS. But I was like, okay, like, the speed is the thing. He's not getting separation. I can be right now. But instead, Pro Football Focus this morning releases a report that they have been timing people during the actual, like, workout drills when the receivers, like, do dropbacks and stuff like that. And they have, like, these metrics on, like, okay, all these guys in the 90th percentile at their top speed in these drills are good NFL players. Here's a short list of them. And here's the list of the guys who did it at this combine, and it's Keon Coleman. He had the fastest in-drill speed of anybody. At like 20.61 miles per hour. And last year, it was Puka Nacua who did that, who had bad drills and then had that and turned out to be really good. So if they have all this tracking, I think probably the racing and, you know, the running between cones does start to go away, at least from anybody on an NFL team caring about it. Like, they might still have it just because it gets ratings. But
yeah.
But, like, there's, like, all the tracking data seems like it should make it pretty obsolete from an actual scouting perspective.
Yeah, there's a lot. For as long as this combine has existed, we still don't have, you know, concrete correlation between the different drills and what matters and what doesn't matter. And, heck, we even, as a journalist, primarily what we're there is the interviews, which mean even less than the actual drills in terms of what a long-term player. I mean, there's a lot of guys who gave great interviews who I imagine won't have very good NFL careers, and a lot of guys that were kind of bad interviews that will be stars in this league. You know, there's just very little to glean from that. So it's definitely a flawed process. And as players become less enthusiastic about participating, I mean, even if it's ratings, you know, players are going to be like, okay, give me a cut, you know, give me some of that.
Yep.
And then I'll participate. I'll, you know, do a little dog and pony show and, you know, meet the media and get out there. And otherwise I'm just going to do my thing at home and train and not, you know, not be put on display just for the sake of it. So, I don't know. I don't know where we're headed with this thing. I do think they probably at some point will need to address that and figure out what, especially as players get more leverage here, what makes more sense, what's the most efficient way to do this and still have it be meaningful for NFL teams.
Yeah, and they'll probably have to do some change ups, so they're going to start to lose all their star power like entirely. So, agree with that. All right. So, in terms of the actual performances, I put some risers and some fallers down. Do you have any favorites out of this after actually going over some stuff and seeing how people did?
Yeah. Well, I mean, to go back to the Garendo thing, like having Tanner Bordellini, another Wisconsin guy, have an absolutely great day for an interior lineman. I was all about that. Wisconsin has had obviously well-documented success producing offensive linemen. So Bordellini is a guy who was like at the end of his recruiting class. He was like the fifth guy that they brought in out of five. He immediately played though as a freshman in the COVID year. They needed him and he's played all over the line. And I would love to see him get an absolute fair crack. Obviously his center skills, the snapping came under fire, but I think he is their best graded, you know, blocker. He's going to be an NFL player.
He's definitely good. I feel bad that he had to snap, honestly. Like he's not a natural tough center. It was just getting your five best linemen out there. And didn't he set the combine record for one of the agilities for center? I believe he did.
Yes. I believe he did. Yes. For one of the agility drills. Yeah. So, that's cool. Xavier Worthy setting the 40-yard dash record is cool. It's cool, but I mean, I'm just so dubious on what that means.
Yeah, those guys,
it seems like it's all about those first splits.
Those guys are almost never the record holders aren't good NFL players. They're like all not good. So that is a dubious one. I would stay away from Xavier Worthy a little bit after that, to be honest. Like, it's not bad to be fast. It's just like you need to have the other skills as well to make that happen.
Right. I think the other thing that really is solidified for me, especially with Cameron Kitchens from Miami testing so poorly, is safety. You know, the defensive secondary is just not, you know, there aren't that many stars. There aren't that many stars on defense, period. Like, we might have a top 14 or 15 of all offensive players, which you would think benefits the Packers, but it's really unclear to me who the stars are that you're going to want to get in the latter half of the first round. I mean, Quinion Mitchell from Toledo might be the top cornerback off the board.
He's good. He's really, really good. I went and watched him a little bit on the recommendation of the folks, and he killed the combine. He's one of the huge risers here. He's actually like, he has the total package, and I don't know why he was where he was in college with that skill set, but he actually can play, I think, any cornerback position and excel there. So I think he will shoot up boards and go really, really early. And if he's there, that would be a good one. But I feel like one of the things that happened in this, it didn't really change any Packer mock drafts at all. Like, they all had Cooper DeJean before, and they still do now because the Packers need a safety, and he's a safety / slot, and that's the guy that's likely to be there when they draft. So the safeties they're rough. That's the main thing. Like, the Packer positions of need it's not a good spot at the top of the draft. There's depth guys that you can plug in there later on, but like, the safeties all testing poorly really is kind of a bummer for what we actually need to fix the team, except for the fact that every NFL team cut their safeties today. So there's at least that we got going for us.
It seems almost impossible at this point that the Packers do not address that position through free agency. I mean, you can still draft a safety. They could use more than one, but it seems almost certain to me that that's a free agency addition.
Yeah.
And maybe cornerback. Like, I don't know about cornerback. I don't know. The linebackers aren't like first round linebackers really either. Running back actually, which doesn't have the top flight talent, of course, but that's probably the spot that the Packers are most equipped to deal with in the draft because the depth is so good. You know, my colleague Pete Doherty wrote that they should draft three running backs, which like made kind of was like, three? Are you serious? But like, the depth is there. If that's a position that they really want to reinforce, knowing that, you know, maybe it's just Aaron Jones who's back, then that could be a route to go. Multiple running backs.
It's not a three,
but could be.
Yeah. And one of the things the Packers have working for them a little bit is because they don't really need a receiver. I still think they'll probably take one, but they don't need one. And there's so many. This is like maybe the best receiving class I've ever seen. And they're going to be just filling up the first few rounds of the draft. And so like safeties and running backs and off-ball linebackers will probably fall a bit because there are more high-value positions that are likely to jump up here, and a lot of quarterbacks too. So I'm on board with that. Like, Jalen Wright's awesome, and you can probably get him in, like, the fourth. And there's a ton of good running backs up top for them to take. I'm sad about Estime out of Notre Dame running slow because he looks so good on tape. And but in Notre Dame plays the service academies, and sometimes they make you look faster than you really are. And maybe that's what happened there.
Yeah, I don't know. But I think it'd be hilarious if this, of all years, is the year that they end up using a first-round pick on a wide receiver. That would be so hilarious to me. 2002, I think, is the last time with Javon Walker that they've done that. And now they seemingly have receivers coming out of their ears. But you could see, I know you love, like, Adonai Mitchell. Like, if you could see somebody falling to 25, and it ends up being somebody who falls in the Packers' laps, and they're like, well, we got to do it. So that's just going to be so great. I can't wait for the content. Yeah.
It's all just guessing at this point. I need an updated board at some point, but I think he might be like a second or third rounder still at this point.
Yeah, sorry. That's correct, yes.
He's awesome, and I would like to draft him, but I do think you can get him a little later.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and 2 seconds and 2/3, pretty appetizing situation for the Packers to be in. First round pick is, you know, I'm almost like there's some dubiousness there. Like, are they going to get a player that doesn't belong being drafted at 25? It feels like that this draft doesn't have that. It's got, like, its top 15, and then it's got a lot of guys who could be who are second, third round picks. Well, the Packers have a lot of those, but then what do they do at 25? So maybe they do trade back. Maybe they do take, you know, Cooper DeJean. So, So I don't know.
Kool-Aid will be around there. That's fun, just because of his name.
Yeah, for sure. Although we did get an Alabama secondary player for the Packers a few years ago in Ha Ha Clinton Dix. I'm not sure we want to relive that particular aspect of it. But
good point.
When he was late getting to the podium, a lot of guys are late getting to their interviews because of just the logjam in medicals and things like that. He actually was really late. I don't know what the holdup was, but of course the joke is he's going to come smashing through the wall and say, oh, yeah, right as he gets to his point. That's extremely lame, and I apologize.
Well, I mean, any like a team advertising marketing coordinator needs to do that if they have him. 100%.
It's criminal if he doesn't have like all kinds of sponsorship deals already.
Also, Chop Robinson, of course, shot up boards, mentioned earlier, one of the best razzes of the thing. Basically, every Penn State player was like a 10 raz, super athlete guy, a couple tight ends. And I'm just like, what is going on there? Because they're not very good. Penn State's okay, especially on defense. But a lot of their offensive players, especially, too, like they put a tight Theo, I don't remember Theo's last name. They put like two tight ends in a row that have the best raz of all time, but who averaged like 10 yards a catch, and that is insane. So I'm staying away from that until I learn what their secret is. It seems not repeatable. Did you see the quarterback's throw by any chance?
I was not there for the quarterback's throwing, no.
Okay.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. I feel like that's something that is actually better to see in person than on TV, probably. It's hard to get a sense of how fast balls are going, you know, like at a baseball game. Like, if you watch on TV, it seems like pitchers throwing is just like, oh, I could hit that. But if you're there live, it's like, that would kill me in 2 seconds. And I was especially curious about J.J. McCarthy because he had the second hardest throw of the quarterbacks there, which surprised me. And Joe Milton had the hardest, which does not surprise me. But I was wondering if he actually looked like that. So never mind. I would also like Joe Milton on the Packers. That would be fun.
I saw him in a hallway, and they all wear like little shirts that say what their number is, not like their actual jersey number, but they're all basically given numbers based alphabetically. I was like, who is that guy? QB, whatever it was, 14 or whatever. And I immediately looked him up on my little cheat sheet, like, oh, that's who that is. So,
if you're going to take a guy to sit and develop for a little bit, he's the one you want. He will instantly have one of the three best arms in the NFL. And while he was like worse than Hendon Hooker last year at Tennessee, just in terms of everything, He also didn't have Jalin Hyatt. They graduated a different guy. And his numbers are still pretty good. They're just not like as good as Hooker's all-time great season was. So I think he's actually underrated a little bit. I like Joe Milton more than most people do. And if you put him through like NFL development for a year or two, you might end up with something really special. Like, there's no reason he can't be like Josh Allen 2.0 or Anthony Richardson on Hurts. Like, that arm doesn't come along very often. So put him on my team. I hope they draft him in like the third or fourth or something like that.
Yeah. I was thinking of Brian Thomas earlier when I said a Donnie Mitchell that would fall. Although Brian Thomas, I think, is a late first round guy too.
I think that's right.
There's so many different directions this could go, Paul. There's so many possibilities here. They could go OL, they could go DB. I think they're all kind of in the same.
Yeah.
You know, they're.
I do think they'll probably take a tackle. That's probably one of the safest bets. At the top, it's a pretty good tackle class. So I bet they do go that way. I know we have questions about this, or guards who can be tackles and tackles who can be guards, which the Packers, of course, love their versatility.
I know Amarius Mims was a name I saw in some mock drafts. I'm not sure he's going to be reachable after his performance at the combine. Yeah. Feels like he's going to rise out of the Packers, Packers first round price range. But I would love if they found a way to get Roma Dunze. That guy was a really fun interview. He performed well. He was probably on my all interview team. If I could have a team, he'd be on it. So he'd be a lot of fun.
He did everything right. All interview reports are that he was awesome. He actually stuck around and like did every single drill just because he was like a completist about it. And he's my favorite receiver. I like him more than Marvin. He's a physical specimen. He's an awesome route runner and good at every soft skill and a physically imposing presence and seems like he'd be a good clubhouse guy. I like him a lot. He outperformed Marvin this year too. He just did.
Dang, that there was some really good video. The video that was taken, this was the moment that made me laugh out loud. There was it's a little bit like the Super Bowl. There are some people that are there just to ask clown questions, you know, about birds and space and conspiracies. And one guy was rattling him off and asked Adunze, you know, could you land an airplane in an emergency? And he's like, no, all souls will perish. I thought that was really quick.
That is great. That's a good, clever answer.
Yes, very charismatic and obviously very talented as well.
Yeah.
So yeah. All right. Are we on questions already? Should we probably do it?
And we can do questions. Theo Johnson was who I was trying to think of from Penn State, by the way. And the tight ends are awful in this draft. Just terrible. I'm glad we got them all last year because we would not be getting them this year. Brutal.
Yeah, Brock Bowers didn't test, and I, to be honest, I wasn't even there for the tight ends because I can't fathom the situation where one of the, I mean, obviously a late round guy could end up on the Packers, but
the one that gets mentioned a lot is Ben Sinnott because he plays the other position, the Josiah DeGuerra position. So
that's right, that's baby. H back to the stars.
Yes.
Yep. Kansas State. I like it. I think I was there for a little of him, but I wasn't paying attention. I'm not gonna lie. It's hard. You have to dive. You know, like there's 10 people talking at one time. So, you know, I felt really bad for Jordan Travis of Florida State, who is this awesome quarterback all year. He gets hurt, which naturally has caused his draft stock to go down.
Yep.
But he's I believe it was Caleb Williams who's going at the same time. I don't remember for sure, but in any event, there's clearly a like star podium. Podium four is where you want to go. If you are like, if you're on podium four, it's because it is known that a lot of damn people want to talk to you. So like Caleb Williams is holding court. Travis is down on the other end of the floor on podium eight. And it's just like, this sucks, man. You were really good. Yeah. It sucks that you're down here talking to like this small group of people while the rest of the world wants to hear from Caleb Williams. But that's podium life. That's how it goes at the NFL combine. Lucky to not be on a side table. Those are the guys who are a little bit, you know, like late round guys. They get shuffled off to tables on the side.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Poor Jordan Travis. Really, he was so good 2 years ago, and it just did not come together for him. And now he's up against Caleb Williams on interview day. That's brutal. Alas.
Yeah.
All right. Should we do some questions?
Let's dive into it. Here we go. Mark Podskarby. Again, Patreon people have question priority. Lots of Patreon questions. Mark Podskarby says, considering the issues with little to no agility testing, how useful is the combine data we got this year?
Not as much as it should be. That is typical. I mean, the Packers famously base their thresholds largely on the agility drills. Ted Thompson, in particular, when he was running the show, it was all about three cone. They still rely on that heavily. They like athletes. And not having it is genuinely rough. I'm sure that they have proxies for it, and scouting can tell you a lot about the agility of people. But it's really bad for people like me. Like NFL teams probably know exactly what they're doing for the most part and what they're looking at and what people's agility actually is. But when we're trying to put, some metrics to all this stuff, that's one of the important ones. And honestly, I mentioned that Sumer Sports study earlier, agility is pretty important for pretty much everybody. At least one of the agility drills is up there for everybody. And so it really does hurt a lot. It's bad. It's rough. Annoying. I wish they would reschedule it to make that happen. Those are also kind of fun to watch, too. I like the three cone. I think it's fun.
Yeah, and it's funny because it really solidified for me this experience how much the 40-yard dash is the king of the drills. It is the one everyone wants to see.
Yes.
But arguably tells you less than everything else, maybe bench press. I mean, obviously it's positionally related, but it's not that. I don't know why. I guess it's the easiest visually. I think some people sit down for a three cone and they don't even know what's going to happen. They don't know the directions the guys are going to go initially. So it's not a natural made for TV moment. Whereas the 40-yard dash maybe is, but it is.
I think it's just everybody knows all the 40-yard dash. The having a 4.4 yes. 40 is a thing. They know how much faster a 4.2 is than that. Everybody can go outside and run if they want to. It's really easy to imagine yourself in the situation. And it is only important for two positions, that is tackle and tight end, it has good predictive value for those two. Nothing else. Running back, it's almost pointless. Wide receiver, it's almost pointless. You have to there's only so slow you can be and still be an effective player. It's kind of you need to have a average-y 40 to be an NFL player. But it's not predictive for anything other than those two. And then that's pretty much it. For tight end, by the way, it's very predictive for receiving as a tight end. It is far more predictive, in fact, than any other metric is for any other position.
Fascinating.
If you were just judging, if you had to pick one thing to judge one position on, it would be 40-yard and tight end. That would be it.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. What? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out. Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in 3 minutes, dog, she's knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
That is fascinating, and funnily enough, tight ends were not featured prominently because they are not the fastest nor the slowest times, and therefore they do not get any run whatsoever. That's very odd. Very funny. All right, Ryan Ziegler says, should the draft move up in time? Seems like it would be way more fun if we could have the combine and then a week later roll into the draft. Make all of your private visits happen during the event of the combine. Maybe it becomes a week-long process.
I know what the problem would be if you did that. The problem doing that would be that if you made it before the draft, a week before the draft, everybody would do their pro days before the combine. And then if they hit metrics that they liked at their pro days and decided, okay, I have nothing to gain from the combine, they would all skip it. That would be the problem there. You would essentially, I think, have to outlaw pro days to make that work, and I don't think you can do that. They're not under your control. So I think that's the major issue there.
Yeah, and I mean, it is, bears repeating, although I'm sure most people know this, it's so important which players Green Bay brings into Green Bay. That's how you know that there's serious interest. Those are the guys that have the strongest likelihood of getting drafted by the Packers. And there's, you know, several other visits that each player is going to make. So you got to allow time for those visits to happen, which is why there's so much space between the combine and the draft. And I do get the sense the combine is kind of like a sorting mechanism. You know, they've got their guys, but then maybe, you know, there's all these dudes. Maybe there's a couple new guys on the radar or a couple guys fall off. Now they get down to real brass tacks and bring those guys into Lambeau Field. That just seems to be what the process is. And I'll finish Ryan Ziegler's thought. 1 week of pre-combine team visits and interviews, agility testing for the weekend, you know, following the draft thoughts. It's just they really want to bring guys to Green Bay, you know, where they get along. It's not just a 10 to 15 minute interview. And I mean, these poor guys don't even remember exactly which teams they've met with. That's how informal sometimes or how fast these meetings go. Like it's just too, you just aren't learning enough. So there has to be time where they can come to you, and that has to happen several times over. Obviously that takes some time.
Yeah. And I feel like Ryan, and not to, you know, misspeak what your intention was here, but I feel like that is a very like media focused idea to like turn the whole thing into one big event where like it's almost a competition where you have pre-combine and then combine, and then like the draft immediately after is like the almost like the grand prize show of the combine at that point. And you know, for NFL teams, the combine is a learning experience and not meant to be this thing it's turned into, this big TV and you know, media weekend frenzy that it is. So I think NFL teams also really wouldn't care for that schedule. It would put them behind the eight ball as much as the people participating in the combine.
Yeah. All right. Price Trozen says, back to my question from last week, any OMG guys from this combine? And who is an OMG guy from past combines that Tex got to see?
Tex ain't here. I will ask him. Maybe I will stitch it in at the end. I don't, did you have any OMG guys on this one?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Chop Robinson was really ridiculous.
Yeah, I think Chop was ridiculous. That was a good one.
You do get to stand next to these guys a little bit and sort of appreciate. I'll tell somebody, like somebody that's not a first round guy necessarily, he might be, but when we were out to eat, Chris Jenkins walked in from Michigan, the son of former NFL player, actually Cullen Jenkins, former Packers player. It's his nephew.
Yeah.
He walked in and it's like, oh my God, that dude is like, that's not how mortal people should be built. You know, like he is just incredibly built.
Yep.
So that was striking. But as far as the numbers, I think they kind of speak for themselves, you know, like there are guys who are off the charts, Roma Dunze and, you know, the 4-2 guy whose name is already escaping me, Xavier from Texas. Xavier, Texas, which would be an
Xavier
amazing
Worthy.
Name for yeah. a wide receiver.
I mean,
Xavier
I,
Worthy.
Part of the issue there is like the four. I just don't think the 40 is that important, but that is an impressive feat. That is like an oh my God, that is an incredible fast time to run a 40-yard dash in. So, yeah, I get that one, but.
Yeah, Braden Fiske from Florida State was really good too.
Yeah, Sweat was impressive in his own way, of course. Big man.
In a very different way. In a way that I appreciate. Like, all I want after seeing that man run is for him to have the football in his hands at some point in his rookie season. I am very much here for that. I don't know if he's going to be playing in his rookie season. He did not test particularly well, but it doesn't matter. It's, you know, he's meant to be big, and he is big. So.
Yeah.
All right, Jonathan Deal says, why do the Packers consider some athletic metrics more important than others? What makes an O-lineman's three-cone drill more valuable to them than, say, his bench press reps? Or non-athletic stuff like having a specific height requirement for cornerbacks or weight requirements for wide receivers? I mean, this is just simply there's correlation on different positions, like we've said, that makes a big difference.
And it is based on their own internal, you know, records of what works and what doesn't. And we have, now at least a couple studies on what seems to be important broadly. But this is just based on studying, really. And I suspect a lot of teams, and this still probably is true, but getting less so, a lot of it's probably a little anecdotal. We just like big guys at this spot, and we just like this at this. The Packers were one of the first teams to really put like hard metrics in place for a lot of their positions. And a lot of that, I'm 100% sure, was based on dumping data into a spreadsheet and sorting where they had useful people and where they didn't. Like, that definitely happened inside at Green Bay at some point. And it worked for a long time at a lot of positions. The NFL does change over time. Defenses change, and the types of players that succeed based on adjusting to those defenses changes. So you got to roll with the times a little bit, but it is what it is. Like, O-lineman three-cone is because they have to be agile in short spaces and make quick movements and still deliver power. A lot of them make sense, honestly. I'll tell you, one of the weird ones for receiver, 40 yards, almost useless. The explosion drills are good, but bench press is actually quite predictive for receivers, which I think nobody would guess, but it does make actually a fair bit of sense, especially given the difference between playing receiver in college and the NFL, where you're going to run into a lot more aggressive press man with a lot fewer free releases, and you actually do need some upper body chops to get off the line pretty frequently. So even that one makes a little bit of sense. So there's some theory in translating what's going to work at the next level, and then there's, the metrics as they have them and they run them.
Keith Keskinen says, are there any testing numbers that can really kill a guy's draftability? Who are guys that come to mind that really hurt themselves or the Packers likely took off their board due to poor testing? Bucky Irving comes to mind for me, but he did not do agilities, and that's where he should be pretty good. Now, I'll say Cameron Kitchens is a guy who tested poorly and probably cost himself a little bit. But, I think that maybe the better question is, can a guy test himself out completely off of draft boards? I mean, you can if you're already low on draft boards, but if you're considered a top, 50 pick, 75 pick, can you really show up at the combine and do so poorly in certain areas where you could fall off a draft board entirely? I don't know if you can.
I think you probably can't fall off everybody's draft board, but you can definitely fall off the Packers draft board. Like, they will, if you don't meet their metrics at either your pro day or at the combine, probably cross you off entirely. They're pretty rigid. They have broken it a couple times, and it's burned them. Like, Amari Rodgers was a pick that went against their metric cutoffs and didn't work, and that's happened a couple of times in the past. And I don't know if they'll learn from that necessarily, but if you have a bad three cone, you're often going to be off that. I actually think Estime is probably off their board at that 40-yard dash, which again doesn't matter that much for running backs. It's kind of below the minimum threshold. Like, that's the problem with that 40-yard dash time. There aren't any good running backs that ran the 40-yard dash as slow as him. I think John Meerdink managed to find one who's escaping. Who's the guy who went to Oregon who hit somebody with his helmet? LeGarrette Blount. I believe LeGarrette Blount is the only example of anybody succeeding in the NFL that slow. And it's not like LeGarrette Blount was one of, the best running backs in football at any point. He's just kind of a useful guy. So you got to hit, I would say, some minimums at certain positions. And, if you bomb out on your pro day and at the combine, it'll get you off boards. The other thing is, prep for the combine can be a red flag in and of itself. Like, if you didn't take it seriously and put in the training, that can be an off-field red flag as well as an on-field red flag.
Sure. To go back a little bit, I was just looking at bench press for receivers, and most of the, hardly any of the big guys actually did this. I think there are only 12 receivers that did the bench press.
Yep.
The guy at the very bottom is Brian Thomas, who I think is probably the highest regarded prospect on this list. Ladd McConkey, just a couple reps ahead of him. So that's so weird that if there is a correlation, you would think receivers would be more pressed into that. But
Who had a really good bench press was Randall Cobb. His RAS wasn't good at all, but he actually was good at that. And it's always kind of stuck with me, because I didn't think bench press was useful for a receiver. And I was like, Randall Cobb, he went to the combine and he did good at the useless thing, but turns out it might not be useless. So maybe he was just ahead of his time.
And again, like, teams are usually ahead of the curve on this. They know this stuff before the general population does. So sometimes your head scratches and you're like, what did they see? And then you get a guy like Randall Cobb, who maybe was undersized for a second round pick and ends up being, you know, a pretty quality NFL football player, I would say. So wild stuff. All right, Patrick Detmer, suppose the following players are available when the Packers are on the clock with the three picks 25, 41, and 57. And he lists Tyler Newbin, Edgerrin Cooper, Mike Sainristil. If the over-under is set at them picking 1.5 of these players, are you taking the over or the under?
Oh, I will take...
This is a theoretical that it, like, requires the draft board to fall a certain way, and that's pretty wild. But anyway, keep going.
I think I'll take the over on that. I think Edgerrin Cooper, if he's there, they will probably go at that. They need him. He's the best at that position by far. And I think there's a decent chance they'd be interested in both of the other two, but Newbin in particular, because I don't like any of the safeties in this class, really, but he's not a bad one to get. I think he's one of the top two, and I think they'll probably go for he did hit their thresholds, their traditional thresholds. So, yeah, I think there's a good chance I'd take the over here. I think two is reasonable, with three being in play.
I mean, I'll take the under just because trying to predict what's going to happen in third round, second round is madness. But, you know, I do think Tyler Newbin, I think there's a chance he's the only first-round safety taken, depending on how you feel about Cooper DeJean. So there's certainly an interest there. Edgerrin Cooper, like you said, is probably the best in his class at linebacker and probably a second-round guy who's going to be available at 41. Sainristil is still super interesting. Like, they're going to come away with a slot corner out of this draft. Mm-hmm. And I know that a lot of people are high on Sainristil. Still, I think it's possible he's gone by 57, but I don't know if I really believe that. So that's a really good thought exercise. I will take the under because of the draft, but that's great. Rob Regis says, what are the Packers' top five draft needs? How far are they realistically from Super Bowl contention?
They don't have a bunch of really huge needs. I mean, the needs they have tend to be the positions that you traditionally consider to be least important. They need safeties, either through the draft or through free agency, or probably both. They don't have any. The ones that they did have weren't very good. So need one is safety with a bullet. They do probably need one more corner, a slot or otherwise, but it's not a crushing need. They're okay there. They definitely... if they're going to play the new style, I do think they could use a beefier defensive tackle along with an inside linebacker, which is why Cooper gets mentioned all the time in mock drafts to the Packers. They're all the big ones are on defense. They could use an offensive lineman, but they're okay if they don't get one, or they can do the Packer thing and get guys later on and turn them into good players later. They're awesome at that. So it's really just defense up the middle. They need a safety, probably a nickel corner, an inside linebacker, and a defensive tackle up front. It's that. Switching to this defense, they just need to get more talented up the middle. That's not five, that's four, but there you go.
Brian Gutekunst spoke to the media before things got going and stressed, and this is not like novel necessarily, but stressed versatility among guys. You know, he'd like to see guys that could play safety and slot corner, you know, like all together, mix and match. I don't know if that's all the time realistic, but with that in mind, I feel like Cooper DeJean is so obviously walks like a duck is the duck.
I know.
If he's healthy.
I'm already anticipating us being on the clock and him being there and us already writing like preview, you know, reviews of the pick, and then them picking somebody that just pisses us all off.
Yeah, like a receiver would be my favorite.
Yeah, that'd be good.
A receiver,
that'd be fun.
You know, Keon Coleman would be perfect.
I get dibs on that if it happens, man. Oh.
Yeah. Donald Anderson, can you position players on the current Packers roster into the 4-3? I know the defensive backs map the same as the 3-4, so my interest is the line and the backers. Who on the current roster fits a 5-technique end? How about 1-technique nose and 3-technique defensive tackle, which in my understanding is the most important position? Who are the Sams, the Mikes, and the Wills? And finally, who doesn't fit at all?
They fit okay. And I'm bad at the techniques, so I'm going to get one wrong. But they lack their traditional nose here that the big anchor middle guy. So that's it. Like, Kenny fits in as a decent enough, one of them, one of the fours on the end. Van Ness and Preston Smith both fit fine as traditional 4-3 edges. Gary will be fine just because he's such a good athlete. He's a little light, but again, not a huge deal. And they don't really have, Quay is as fast as a traditional Mike, but I don't think he's good enough to play it. He actually, his skill set might work a little bit better there. He reacts so slowly and is not a good enough tackler. It's the backers that are going to be the problem here. But Gary's fine as either an edge or one of the three. It's really just the interior, the coverage guys that they need help on. That's really it. I hate that they're called the technique nomenclature a lot. Especially because one of them is zero technique. Like, that's a thing. surely there's at least one technique going on.
You know, when I first started covering high school sports fresh out of college, I had not heard the technique nomenclature before. And one of the first guys I talked to was talking all about, well, I got this guy at the two technique, this guy at three technique. I thought he was messing with me. I was like, what is that? What is that? Is that like their style of play? Like what's happening there? So I don't blame people for not being into that. And like going back to Mike Sams and Wills, that's not everybody knows what that means. Yep. And even for people who do, like, it's hard to really contextualize, okay, what are the characteristics of a good Mike? What are the characteristics of a good Will and things like that? So,
yeah.
What do you think about Peyton Wilson, by the way, speaking of linebackers? NC State guy, he's been around a long time, great numbers, athletic numbers, but an injury history.
Yeah, I think interested, but injury history scares me a little bit. Sure. And by everything I read, quite a bit worse than Edger and Cooper. Like, there's a significant drop-off in instincts and tackling and coverage there. So I wouldn't be unhappy if they got him in, like, the early third. But I think he's currently being mocked around the second, which seems a little bit high. I actually wish we had Matt or Tyler for the technique question, but alas. At least you know what, we can do one public service here for people who don't know why the linebackers are Sam, Mike, and Will. That's just strong side, middle, and weak side. That's all that means, and one syllable. And
Yeah, Peyton Wilson's brother, of course, pitches for the Milwaukee Brewers. We have to get a baseball
Bryce's
reference
brother,
in here.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Yep, Bryce Wilson's brother.
On my baseball podcast, Bryce won the award for the thickest brewer this year since Rowdy's gone.
Oh, yeah.
He's got a football body there, so that makes sense.
I am still tripping on the fact that Peyton Wilson is 2 years younger than Bryce Wilson. Bryce Wilson is going to pitch in his seventh Major League Baseball season, and Peyton Wilson is a prospect to be drafted just now. He is 2 years younger, but because Bryce was drafted out of high school, made it to the big leagues at 20 years old, and Peyton took the extra COVID year, here we are. The math adds up. Trust me. It's wild.
It is wild.
Donald Anderson says, also, if you don't mind indulging a second question under the Packer fan living in Chicago category, why would anyone trade for Justin Fields? It would seem you could draft a running quarterback who can't throw in the third round, who you would then control for 4 years. If a team wants Fields, why not wait till he's cut? Also, which quarterback's in the draft basically the same as trading for Justin Fields? It's such a good question.
It is a great question. And I had to listen to a lot of talk radio this week, because it's been hot and heavy, and everybody here thinks it's fair to get a second rounder for Justin Fields, which seems insane. And then I heard people on The Score, which actually has genuinely pretty smart hosts most of the time, lamenting that the Bears might have to settle for a third. And I was like, I guess you can always find somebody willing to take a chance on a young quarterback if you have a really bad quarterback on your team already. But your question is right, because Justin Fields is probably bad. And I don't think anybody's going to turn him around. We have a really big sample size here that he's just not a good passer, that he's not going to get better about taking sacks. And, like, why would you give up any value at all for him? But I bet somebody does. I think it'll probably be a third or lower, but we've seen worse quarterbacks get traded for a second and change. Was it Josh Rosen who got traded for a second and change a year or two ago? Like, teams do this dumb stuff all the time, and there's a lot of rumors about him going to, like, Pittsburgh or even Minnesota if they can't get Cousins back, which it sounds like they won't. So, like, there's heat about people actually being interested in him. And I guess the other big thing is Fields does have at least one elite skill. He's very, very fast. And somebody will probably see that and be like, well, maybe we can, like, turn him into, like, Justin Hurts lights or something like that. And I don't think you can, but...
Jalen Hurts, because Justin Herbert, Jalen Hurts crossover would be wild.
That would... yes, making Jalen Hurts as fast as Justin Fields would be a very good quarterback, but the opposite of that would be bad. So I am with you here. There's no reason to do that because you can find Justin Fields or better in much of this draft. Like Jordan Travis might be as good as Justin Fields, and he'll probably be available in like the sixth round. I would rather have any of the top six over Justin at this point. They were all more accurate than he was. The least accurate of the top six guys in this draft was Penix, and I would draft him a zillion times over Justin Fields, and he'll probably be available in, like, the third, although he actually had a good combine, and people are now making first-round noise about him again, so we'll see. Could be wrong. But, yeah, your point is a good one. If you trade for Justin Fields and give up anything of value, you've made a bad trade. That's just the case.
Florida State had like 12 combine guys or 13 combine guys, something insane. History is going to look back on this when they weren't invited into the top four and be like just completely confused when these guys are lighting up the NFL. And it's like, how is it that team wasn't invited with an undefeated season into the top four?
Oh, did you see Johnny Wilson in person at all by any chance?
I did not, no.
Okay, he's the other receiver other than Keon Coleman who played for them. And he is like 6'8". People are talking about like switching him to tight end just because he's like 6'8", 230. But he played split wide receiver for them and was very good. And he also blew up the combine like all the receivers did. So he's fun. Yeah, I would like him on the Packers. He does drop the ball a lot, though. He would be a little Watson-y.
And they only had one guy drafted at the combine last year, Florida State did. That's... What a class. What a group of guys that is. Okay, so where are we at? We're at Flaley Joel Osment. What are the chances we get another Many Bourbons podcast sometime this season? Willing to donate to a charity of your choosing if it's also televised.
I mean...
What do you think?
It's not impossible. I mean, part of it requires me being probably somewhere out that's not my house without children around. So I don't know. If there's enough interest, maybe we'll do that sometime before the draft. But I also need to get my voice back, and then I don't want to ruin it with bourbon once I get it back. Right. And yeah, so I don't know, like 10%. We'll see. If
you'd have to do it with Matub. You can't do a Many Bourbons podcast without Matub, right?
Well, I did. I think he's referring to the one I did by myself.
Yeah, I know he is, okay. but
I would rather somebody else there. Yes, that would be.
I feel like Matub would be, you'd hurt his feelings if you didn't do it.
That's
do it
true.
With him,
he probably would. He would take it personally. He invented Many Bourbons. He's got shirts with that saying on it.
Shout out to Matub. We miss you, buddy. Yeah. Matt Pickett, our buddy, said, "Can you think of any players whose draft stock moved either way up or way down because of the combine, but ultimately shouldn't have because they were, in fact, much worse or better than their testing indicated? That is, what are some examples of combine fools gold?"
Ooh, I like combine.
I mean, the example everyone uses is Mike Mamula of the Philadelphia Eagles, who was a workout wonder and did not play well in the NFL. That's like the North Star of combine, combine wonders, right?
Yeah. It'll probably be Xavier Worthy, who will probably get drafted too high for breaking that record. When
do the Raiders still do that? Do they still take like the fastest guy, forget everything else? Like,
I think
Darius Hayward Bay, and
I think when the old man died, that kind of went away. But I'm not 100% sure. Entirely possible. And honestly,
it just feels like something they'd do.
Yeah, and like Chop shot way up. because of that, and I think he's okay, but I do think he may be a little overdrafted too. Like, that was an impressive display. Although edge guys do tend to just need to be athletes, so maybe not. Could be wrong about that. Yeah, that's the big one. I know Justice and Tyler were still in on Estime, even though he ran super-duper slow, but that was really slow. I don't think that was warranted.
Well, if they end up taking three running backs, maybe he's the third one. You never know.
Yeah. I'd be okay with that. That'd be fine. Give him a shot.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't think off the top of my head of other guys.
I feel like this combine was actually more reflective of what people produced on the field than usually happens. Like, often you'll have, like, the Mamula example in spades. Like, lots of guys who didn't produce and then show up and then suddenly impress everybody. Just since I look at receivers, like, all the time, all the receivers who had great productive seasons put up great metrics, and all the ones who didn't put up less good metrics. So it really lined up better than usual with how people played on the field, and it's actually kind of hard to pick those out for that reason. Even Xavier Worthy was pretty good. Like, it wasn't like Darius Hayward Bay at all. It was a guy who was actually pretty decent, broke the 40-yard dash record.
Yeah. I'm curious about the process. I know there's just a group of scouts who are in charge of inviting people to the combine, but yeah, there's a couple it's like, wow, I wouldn't have expected that. Maybe, you know, Mumajang Meadow was a good example for the Badgers because he didn't play very much his senior year as his workload got cut back. So he definitely stood out as a junior and was going to be kind of one of the main, the sort of breakout stars his senior year. It didn't end up happening, but like, were they just looking at junior tape and they felt like there was some possibility there? You know, were the Badgers wrong to put the guy on the shelf pretty much when, you know, he was capable of being invited to the combine? Like, who makes those calls? Who's the one that's really seeing that out there? Because that's a very exhaustive job.
No kidding.
Given that, you know, you've got representatives from all kinds of weird places, you know, like James Madison and, you know, Air Force. There's not every school is represented, of course, but like there's guys really off the beaten path who make it to this place. So it's super interesting. All right. Dutch Boy 5 says, sticking with the Ron Wolf philosophy, always draft a quarterback. Can you name one that you would take in the third round or later? There's a lot of dudes I'd take in the third round or later.
Totally.
I don't know if the Packers would do that.
I would like to get Milton. I think he's a great developmental guy to have, and that would make me very happy. Also, I think some guys might fall into the third round who we're not expecting. Like, I'm not sure where Michael Penix is going to go. He had a good combine by all accounts, and he's currently being mocked mostly in the second, from what I can tell, right around where Bo Nix is. But I could see him falling to the third. People have been mentioning Michael Pratt, Tulane's quarterback. My numbers don't like him as well, although you can make the same case as a developmental guy. I wouldn't mind having Jordan Travis. He is a little bit,
I'd love it.
He's a little bit small, but I think he is a really cerebral quarterback. And I think, the fact that he was so good 2 years ago should count for something. I also mentioned this on the last pod, but I haven't watched him yet, but Jack Plummer was the best of the bad quarterbacks that nobody mentions this season. And he might just not have an NFL arm. So I got to go look at that. But he would be worth, you know, taking a look at too. But give me Milton.
I've seen a couple mocks that have given the Packers late round quarterbacks like Sam Hartman out of Notre Dame, Boo. Who was at the combine.
Yeah.
Talia Tagbiola of Maryland, who don't believe was at the combine. no, absolutely not. I love Jordan Travis there. I think, I think there's a really good chance that the Packers' backup quarterback next year is in this draft, you know. And if that's the case, I think there's a lot of options there. Guys who are experienced, who can handle, you know, what it's going to be to presumably not really get a fair shake, barring injury at starting reps with this football team. Like, I think that's on the table here, and Joe Milton would be fascinating for sure. But I don't know if that's kind of what they're in the market for. If they're in the market for like a guy that could project to be something special, or do they want somebody with like, you know, somebody who's going to just have been in the already, like, is already 25 years old,
right,
and is already prepared to be kind of a backup career quarterback at this point. I don't know. How old is Joe Milton? I don't even know. Maybe
I think he's really young. I will look it up.
Okay. I mean, obviously, if the talent is there, that's what you want. But
yeah.
While you're looking it up, let's go to the next question.
He's actually not that young. He's 24. I'll take that back.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My bad.
Me too.
That'd be awesome if they got him. That'd be sweet. Steven Kurtz, is it possible to compare the lineman metrics that you like for Mark Tauscher versus Chad Clifton? Or was that too long ago? What about David Bakhtiari? Mark Tauscher did not test well.
He did not.
He was a bottom rung guy.
Mark Tauscher had a 2.25 RAS. His best metrics were the bench, where he did 22 reps, but that's still only a 5, and his weight at 318. But everything else is in the red for Mark Tauscher. And he's not a metrics guy, never was. Mark Tauscher was an on-field technique guy who just looked like a gumdrop who happened to be able to move his feet really well and get in the way of people really well. But, you know, he was not the ripped, like, Adonis that some of these guys are. And then Chad Clifton was a 9 RAS guy. So, the only area he struggled was the broad jump. Everything else, he was elite or good. And so, I mean, he's an easy scout. If he plays well at all, then you take that guy in a second. So there's no comparing the two. Tauscher's just a scouts guy. Like, somebody saw him actually put a good technique tape on the field, and it worked out really well for the Packers. But, man, he did not test well at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine those numbers and that guy actually getting drafted.
Seriously.
At all. So, like you said, somebody just was like, let's use a flyer pick on him because he's got something there. Somebody advocated for him, and boy, did that pay off for the Green Bay Packers. There are those guys out there that are not going to wow you at anything, and yet they get on a football field and they are truly, they can be difference makers. So. Yeah. It's very fun. Shaped like a gumdrop. That's incredible. I've never heard that before. I love it. All right, what are we at? Oh, last one already. Twitter question from Adam Huddle. Will Goody draft all the offensive tackles transitioning to offensive guard prospects on day 3 this year? Feels like the over-under should be set at 2.5.
I think they'll be big into that. I think there's a lot of good, a lot of potential guys that'll be down there. And they seem to do it every year anyway. You can never have too many offensive linemen. And, I mean, it served the Packers well going to that route. So I think 2.5 is a good place to set that. And I'll take the over on that. I bet there'll be a ton.
If I had to pick, I think the Packers go offensive line in the first round. I think there's enough options there where that still makes some sense. You know, you see, like, Jordan Morgan from Arizona is a name that gets mocked a lot to them.
Yep.
Fuaga, who I think is already – is it Washington? He's a guy that might be too high now. I'm not sure, but that seems like the logical place because it's such an offense top heavy draft.
Yeah,
it seems like that might be the right play. And then second, third round is where you go get a bunch of guys for your defense.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet. There's like 7 guys that hit their thresholds that are like first round tackles. And Joe Alt to be gone by the time they pick unless they trade up.
Oh heavens, yes, yeah.
But you're right, like. Olu Fashanu, probably too high too. Fuaga, and then J.C. Latham, and Mims, who we mentioned before, and Troy Fatanu, which is where I'd put my money for that pick, and Tyler Guyton, all potential guys that they might pick there. The fact that there's just so many offensive linemen with first-round grades makes one of them likely to fall to Green Bay at that spot and pretty likely for them to pick one. And I actually think, even though Cooper DeJean gets mocked to them every single time, I don't think he will be there. I think that someone will nab him earlier and they'll have to trade up if they
get
him.
Yeah, the only thing is, you know, this injury he had, you know, he couldn't test. He's still healing. Well, not healing. He's cleared, but I don't know. I don't know if teams get scared away by that. I'm not sure.
Medicals are a mystery. Woo!
What do you think the Chicago Bears are going to do? What do you feel in your gut?
I think they're going to pick Caleb. I'm pretty sure that's set at this point, more or less. They'll move on from Fields one way or another. I think at this point, it looks pretty certain that's what they're going to do. All the smoke out of Hallis Hall is that.
Man, the Justin Fields thing really just didn't work. It's really going to be a failed experiment. I cannot believe it. The Bears are like... I'm trying to think of what literary reference I'm coming up with where like one half of the family gets all the riches and all the breaks and the luck, and the other one has to suffer, and they're two sides of the same coin. I don't know what I'm quite looking for, but I feel like the Bears just can't. They just can't. Whereas the Packers just can't not. They find a way. I don't know.
I think the analogy you're looking for is twins, the Arnold Schwarzenegger, Danny DeVito.
Yes! Comedy. No, but yes, yes. The Packers are Arnold Schwarzenegger. The Bears are Danny DeVito. And they are funny because of, you know, Always Sunny in Chicago. That's great. Mm-hmm. But the Packers are the Governator. Fantastic.
That's it. All right. We're good. Anything you would like to plug before we get out of here?
No. I always say no, but then I say stuff. So that's a Mike Budenholzer thing with the Bucks. Yeah, no. It's just a placeholder. It's March. March Madness is coming, so we'll certainly have a ton of stuff related to the teams. You know, Marquette, Wisconsin, Marquette women and UWGB women should get in. Maybe UWGB men sneak in. I'm not sure. Depends on the Horizon tournament. I also will be doing some live blogging from the State Boys Basketball Tournament, which is coming up the weekend of St. Patrick's Day. So the days preceding St. Patrick's Day, 14th, 15th, 16th. You can look for me at jsonline.com doing some of that stuff. And then I'm just here, you know, as fun stuff happens, I try to capture it at jsonline.com.
I would also recommend JR's thing on if the Badgers are going to make the NCAA tournament, because this morning I woke up
they
and I was like, are the Badgers going to make the NCAA tournament? And then it was right there for me. I mean, I think they will, but man, it's been a ride.
I think they're out of time to fail. Is you know, they could lose to Rutgers, and that would certainly not be good. But then they play Purdue, and that's it for the regular season, and they're going to lose, you know, maybe they beat Purdue, I don't know, but losing to Purdue is no shame.
Right,
that's
right.
Not going to cost them a seed line or anything. And then they have the Big Ten tournament. I mean, you win one of those two games, Rutgers in the Big Ten tournament, I mean, it's a slam dunk. But even without it, I think they can go 0-3 and still get in. It's going to be really unglamorous, but it's possible.
All right, that puts my mind at ease a little bit. All right, as for me, I actually wrote about Jordan Love and Drake May, and that's going to go up sometime soon because Drake May is a weird high-round pick for his lack of accuracy, and there's only a couple of examples of guys like him having developed into good NFL quarterbacks.
Interesting.
Very small number of those. I'll have a bunch of stuff up using that Sumer Sports thing and people the Packers might draft as pro day numbers get in especially, and I'll have a bunch of Robson Quoba stuff going up too. So I'm getting all those firmed up and keep an eye out for that. You know, as the draft gets closer, we'll do more stuff. But Combine was fun. JR, thanks for joining me. Glad you got to go.
Yeah. Hey, it was fun. Hey, give me a sneak peek though. What, Rops loves Caleb? He's the number one?
He's not
on
number
the Rops
one.
Board, or is there...
Rops likes Jaden Daniels because he had one of the best seasons that a quarterback's ever had, and it's purely statistically based. And even adjusting for things like schedule and his awesome receivers, because he had awesome receivers. It's only so much adjusting you can do. But Jaden, so Rops itself, or Quoba Quops, Q-Bops, it likes him, but he's got other problems. He took a sack on 30% of his pressures last year. That's way too many. That's way more than Justin Fields did. He cut it to 20% this year, but that's it's a question mark. Caleb doesn't have too many question marks. Most of Caleb's question marks are that he seems like kind of a weird guy sometimes. And, you know,
like Russell Wilson, right?
Yeah. And honestly, a lot of quarterbacks are kind of weird guys. That's fine. I think Caleb's numbers are kind of beyond reproach. He's been a top five guy for pretty much every year he's played, which almost nobody ever does.
Right.
And he is a physical specimen. His arm is well more than good enough. His playmaking is more than good enough. I think he'll be fine. Even on the Bears, I think he'll be fine. So. I like him best overall. The one that I like more than most people is J.J. McCarthy. I feel like is held back mostly by just lack of counting stats, and that is mostly just the function of Jim Harbaugh liking to run the ball more than most people. It's a lot of guys run the ball in college to hide their quarterback. That's not the case in Michigan. It's just that Harbaugh likes to run the ball, and so McCarthy's per-play stats are actually really good. I think he's a much better athlete than conventional wisdom dictates, and he's got a couple of weaknesses, but they're the kind that you can kind of fix at the pro level. His deep ball is not great, he's also like one of the youngest guys, but he barely ever gets sacked. He barely ever has any disaster plays, and he's got good physical tools and good accuracy. So I like JJ McCarthy a lot. I think he warrants a first round pick. It'll be interesting to see if he gets one.
Yeah, that's a controversial take at this point. So I am always fascinated to know what you've got going on. So, all right, man, it was good chatting.
Yep, you too.
And as a man.